Good evening. We're going to get this meeting started. This is the August 4th public hearing to accept public testimony on the Abalone Recovery Plan here in Santa Rosa, California. The Fish and Game Commission has been having a number of these hearings in a subcommittee capacity throughout the state of California. We'll be having another one in Eureka and another one in San Diego. And then eventually at this end of this month, a recommendation will be made to the commission that we can either do something, nothing, manipulate it, send it back, chew it up, spit it out, or whatever. But before we do any of that, we'd like to hear from the public and the stakeholders on this issue and find out what you folks are thinking, either pro or con, whether you like it or not, and need to hear what you folks think. So what we'll be doing tonight is, first of all, the department will be doing a presentation, and then we'll be taking testimony from the public. As I just said, we won't be voting tonight or anything, but we will be, definitely listening to what you folks have to say and reporting back to the rest of the commission. And by the end of the month, we may or may not, depending on what all happens, move forward on the Abalone Recovery Plan. Before we begin, I'd just like to introduce a few folks. To my left is John Fisher, the Assistant Executive Director of the Fish and Game Commission. To my right is our newest commissioner, Commissioner Cindy Gustafson, so get to know her. And to her right is Adriana Shea, the Commission Analyst. In the audience, we have Dave Parker from the Department of Fish and Game Marine Region. And we have Warden Bob Pera, who's taking care of us, so if you, rush us, he's going to tackle you. And also, we have Gary Stacey, who's the manager of the Marine Region for the Fish and Game Department. And then we have all of you. I think we're going to begin tonight with Gary Stacey, the manager of the Marine Region, presenting a DVD presentation of the department's overview on this whole thing. And then after that, we'll have some department people comment, we'll have the public testimony, and we'll do a little give and take. And one quick thing, if you want to testify, there's these blue cards over there. Fill them out, give them to us. You got 3 minutes, and we'll talk about it. So,
do you do lights for the screen?
Our AV guys take care of this, so they're pros. They even make me look good on camera. So, okay. So, Mr. Stacey, it's all yours.
Thank you, Commissioner Hantoy, Commissioner Gustafson, and Commission staff. I'm here to introduce our presentation, which tonight is going to be using the latest technology, a DVD of a similar presentation that we've given in this series of meetings to seek input from the public on our Abalone Recovery and Management Plan. Basically, for the record and for the members of the audience, I just wanted to indicate that the reason that we're doing this, as opposed to having some of our biologists here, is I've got them all out in the field trying to collect as much data as they can between now and when the commission meets. And this is something that we're going to be looking at doing more of as a department here in the future. So they couldn't be here tonight, so we're going to do the next best thing and present a DVD presentation. Thank you.
Ian Taniguchi.
That's Ian, but he's really not here.
In Los Alamitos. I'm the ARMP mandate coordinator. Brief overview of the Abalone Recovery and Management Plan, or ARMP. Judging from the people that I see in the audience, you've been to some of these commission meetings, so this is probably a little bit of a review to some of you, but please bear with me. To begin with, the draft Abalone Recovery and Management Plan provides a cohesive framework for recovery of depleted stocks in Southern California and for the management of Northern California red abalone fishery and for future fisheries. The purpose of the plan is to provide a guideline for managing and preventing further declines of all abalone species throughout the state and to ensure the current and future populations will be sustainable. The ARMP consists of two stages, an interim plan and associated management goals, and a long-term plan and associated management goals. The interim management and recovery plan also use available funding and data and become effective upon approval of the ARMP. begin, I would like to first describe the overall approach used to manage abalone under the ARMP for both recovery and management purposes. The concepts are shown here graphically, and this graph is purely conceptual, and is only used as a way to describe the approach we are using in the plan. For the recovery portion of the plan, which pertains to populations that are in poor condition, such as those abalone species that now occur in Southern California, we expect that populations will move along in an idealized trajectory through time as a result of natural processes or through recovery efforts to a point where there is a surplus that can support a fishery. While that recovery is occurring, we are recommending no harvest. Once populations reach a sustainable fishery level, we can consider opening a fishery. Now, for the management portion of the plan, which pertains to populations that are in relatively good status and can sustain a harvest, such as the red abalone population in Northern California and the sport fishery that occurs up there, we hope to manage the fishery in a manner that will continue the abalone stock abundances above the sustainable fishery level. However, if the stock declines below this level, we are recommending a ratcheting down of the harvest pressure within this precautionary zone, down to a point where we would close the fishery with a buffer above the minimum population level necessary to sustain a viable population in the absence of harvest pressure. The main concept to be taken away from this is that we are suggesting two different approaches within this precautionary zone between fishery closure and sustainable fishery level, depending on whether the population is recovering, where we are advocating no fishing, or has been already sustaining a harvest, where we advocate ratcheting down of the take. There are some key density numbers which are used in criteria for both recovery and management within the plan. These numbers are the sustainable fishery density, which is 6,600 abalones per hectare, and then the minimum viable population density, which is 2,000 abalones per hectare. The third line you see on the graph there is the is used in the management portion of the plan and is for closure of the existing fishery, and that is set at 3,000 abalones per hectare. Next, I would like to describe how we derive the density criteria for sustainable fishery and minimum viable population. First, minimum viable population. MVP is the minimum threshold density level at which the population can sustain itself. In other words, if the population density falls below this level, there are not enough individuals to effectively reproduce and sustain the population. The density criteria for minimum viable population is, again, 2,000 abalones per hectare. And this density is based on the published research on other species of abalone and on data from collapsing red abalone species stocks in Southern California. And you can see from this graph, this is This is information from Santa Rosa Island at Red Abalone, and when we started this, populations were right around 1,000 abs per hectare, and you can see through time that has declined. So we know as 1,000 abalones per hectare was not a viable population. The MVP size in the plan was based on the best available data. Data for other abalone species in California is not available at this time. For sustainable fishery level, the density was derived from survey data from three long-established fishery index sites in Northern California. We used the number of abalone per hectare from all depths from surveys at three sites through time. Using the data from 1999 and 2000, which is circled in red on the right side of the graph here, the average density from those three sites is 6,600 abalones per hectare, and was selected because it represents the best estimate of sustainable densities for supporting the ongoing fishery under the current conditions. The sustainable fishery level density at deep depths was established in the same fashion using the same data source, and this density is 3,300 abalone per hectare. These are values using the best available data, but we do recognize that certain limitations, which I'll mention later in the discussion of the management plan. But first, I would like to discuss the recovery portion of the plan. The geographical area involved includes the current moratorium area, excluding the area occupied by sea otters, and considers the individual status of all seven species of Southern California and red abalone along the San Mateo County coast and the Farallon Islands. As required, the plan provides both interim and long-term goals for recovery effort. Our interim goals are to reverse the decline of abalone populations that are in jeopardy of extinction, and to rebuild populations to a self-sustainability throughout their historic range. And by self-sustaining, we mean that populations can continue to survive on their own without any human aid. And finally, our long-term goal is to rebuild populations to fishable levels in at least three-quarters of their historical range. The conceptual framework of the recovery plan is shown here and shows that recovery is intended to be a sequential stepwise process that relies upon changes in criteria to determine whether we should move to the next level in recovery assessment or continue on at the current step. Two variables are used to assess the status of recovery at different points in time. One to assess recruitment, which is a size-based criteria, which we use in Criterion 1, and another is to assess changes in population abundance, which is a density-based criteria, which we use in Criterion 2 and 3. When Criterion 3 has been satisfied, the population has reached the fishable level. As that stage approaches, we will initiate a planning process for fishery reopening, which we labeled fishery consideration, which is at the bottom there, where management, allocation, economic issues, and a possible network of no-take reserves are addressed. At this point in the planning and recovery effort, that stage appears to be many years away. The recovery of abalone populations to this stage will most likely take decades. Sequential stepwise process will require each recovery criterion to be satisfied before going on to the next one. To satisfy criteria one, the plan proposes to use a size-based measure, where we determine whether there are abalone within a broad size range in two different size groups. The first size group is intermediate sizes, or abalone that which fall between 4 inches and the recreational minimum legal size for each species. And then the second group is large sizes, that's any abalone larger than the recreational minimum legal size. This must occur in multiple areas, which we call index sites, to indicate that reproduction and growth are occurring on a wide spatial scale. Once criteria one has been satisfied, the plan proposes to shift to a density-based criteria. And the first criteria is density-based criteria is the minimum viable population, which is 2,000 abalones per hectare. Once that is satisfied, the last criterion is the sustainable fishery level, which is 6,600 abalones per hectare. And this has to occur at least three-quarters of the recovery areas. Data that will measure fulfillment of the spatial component of the criteria are collected within species-specific recovery areas that were determined using commercial landing block data and known recreational fishing areas. Each recovery area is large, such as an island. And the map you see in front of you is the recovery areas for red abalone. And you can see from this map, there are five recovery areas. We have the Central California San Mateo Coast and Farallones. We have three islands. We have San Miguel, Santa Rosa, Santa Cruz, and finally the coastline off of San Diego. And those are the five recovery areas for red abalone. Within each of the recovery areas, there are smaller areas called key locations where abalone were known to have occurred. From the key locations, we have picked a subset as index sites where the majority of the recovery assessment and enhancement activities will occur. Each criteria has a different spatial component to fulfill. Criteria 1 must be satisfied at all index sites. Criterion 2 densities must be achieved at all key locations. And Criterion 3 needs to be satisfied at three-quarters of the recovery areas. The plan also addresses this potential loss of recovery areas. The plan recognizes that suitable abalone habitat within recovery areas may change over time to a point where it's no longer suitable for abalone. Therefore, alternative index sites may replace currently elected ones to account for environmental changes. It is also possible that the entire recovery area may become unsuitable for abalone recovery, for example, through otter reoccupation, disease, or pollution. If 50% of the recovery areas for a species is lost, the plan's preferred option suggests that the long-term recovery goal to a fishery cannot be achieved. Therefore, recovery to our fishery is not an option. And at that point, the interim goal of reestablishing self-sustaining populations becomes the long-term goal. Next, I would like to go over the contents of the abalone management portion of the plan. The abalone management plan considers the current free dive only red abalone fishery which occurs north of San Francisco Bay. And the plan will also apply to any Southern California abalone fisheries that reopen following recovery with adjustments to accommodate for the different species. Similar to recovery, we have developed both interim and long-term management goals. The interim plan has more coarse or crude management adjustments and is based on available funding and data that would become effective upon plan approval. The long-term plan has more refined management adjustments but requires more data, resources, and further development and funding. Their interim plan suggests managing the fishery on a broad and fine scale using two management measures, an adjustable fishery-wide total allowable catch, and the ability to close severely depleted sites while stocks at those sites recover. Guidance on when changes in the management approach need to be considered are based on changes in several criteria we use to evaluate population health. Guidance on changing the management approach is laid out in several decision tables. The criteria used in the decision tables are listed here. The first two criteria are used in the TAC decision table, and criterion 3 is used in the area closure decision table. The first criterion is a measure of recruitment, or the addition of new abalone into the population. This criterion is based on the abundance of smaller adult abalone that have emerged from their cryptic boulder habitat. And for red abalone, this is abalone that fall between 4 and 7 inches. We're using this criteria to determine if there are adequate replacement of abalone to sustain the fishery. The second criterion uses density to evaluate changes within the fish population by using two density targets, sustainable fishery and MVP. For the first target, sustainable fishery, we use two density criteria. The first criteria is an overall density of abalone in all depths to determine whether population can sustain fishing pressure. We also use the density in deeper water to determine a rough assessment of the refuge population. And the deep water refuge is defined as anything greater than 27 feet, which is the depth beyond which most freedivers cannot reach. The second density target is the minimum viable population level, which is used to guide decisions on when fishery should be closed. And finally, the third criterion is a set of measures to help guide decisions on when site-specific closures should be considered. This second decision table is based on changes in catch per unit effort and changes in the distance traveled from access points to take abalone. The first decision table is a TAC decision table, and it uses the first two criteria, as I mentioned earlier. The measures of these criteria are obtained from 8 fishery index sites in Northern California. The plan organizes guidance or actions based on how the assessment of these criteria might change through time. Changes in two measurable criteria, recruitment and density, guide the actions that adjust the TAC and, under extreme conditions, potential fishery closure. In the event of fishery closure, it establishes the guidelines under which the fishery may be reopened. Although the decision table can guide the level at which the TAC is set, in reality, the interim plan relies on a limited set of management tools to regulate the take. These tools are the daily and annual limits and monthly or seasonal closures. Measures of criteria used in the area closure decision table are based on information obtained during our biennial creel surveys at eight fishery sites in Mendocino and Sonoma counties. The guidance in this decision table affects actions at individual sites. As in the TAC decision table, changes in the measured variables or criteria are used to suggest specific actions, such as additional density surveys, area closure, or reopened closed areas. And in this case, closure means area closure, not fishery closure. And the area that would be closed would be a defined area. The interim plan has several limitations that need to be recognized. First of all, data used to guide most of the management decisions under the interim plan come from only 4 heavily fished and 4 moderately fished sites. If these sites are not representative of other locations or the condition of the fishery beyond those sites, the decision could be biased, although it would be biased towards the conservative side of management. The TAC was calculated for the fishery as a whole and not allocated among sites. Consequently, individual sites can be overfished if a large portion of the TAC is taken from a small number of sites. The interim plan addresses this site depletion by suggesting individual site closures, but data and data collection and analysis can slow response time. And finally, the methods used to control take are imprecise. The TAC adjustments must be made in large increments because fine-scale adjustments are not practicable at this time. Also, the TAC does not set an absolute limit on the take. We addressed some of these concerns in the discussion of the long-term plan. The long-term plan considers the use of three approaches: the use of zonal management, or the division of the fishery into zones or regional subunits that can be managed more effectively than a single unit. Also, we are proposing the use of abalone tags. These tags could be issued to limit take from individual zones and to identify legally taken abalone. And finally, we also need more and better fishery data collection to obtain refined zone-specific information to be able to carry out zonal management. The plan provides alternatives for management. The department's appraisal of each of these alternatives is discussed in detail in the plan. At this point in time, I will not go into any much detail because of time constraints. Suffice it to say that there are seven alternatives listed in the plan. The first four alternatives apply to recovery areas within the moratorium area, and the last three suggest adjustments to the current Northern California fishery. And finally, the next thing I'd like to go over is a little bit of the summary of the public comment that was gathered from the five public comment meetings we had through all of last year, beginning in fall of 2003 on the draft plan. The public comment on the draft ARMP was diverse, and I only provide a very brief summary of the comments here. For more details and of the most common comments, please refer to the fact sheet, which we have on the table over here. And also, you can look at table G3 in appendix G of the ARMP, which has recorded all the comments from all those meetings. The comments can be broken out into broad categories pertaining to recovery, management, and miscellaneous, which are comments that covered both recovery and management issues. For recovery, some of the common themes and comments included comments on the recovery goals and criteria, opening a limited fishery within the moratorium area, and comments on concerns about withering syndrome and sea otters. For management, some of the common themes were opening the North Coast to commercial abalone fishing, utilizing constituents in management processes, punch card issues, concerns over a number of index sites, suggested regulation changes, and comments on alternatives. And then the common miscellaneous themes that were mentioned include poaching and MPA issues. And last, I'd like to just briefly go over some of the changes in the ARMP that have happened since the draft plan was given to the Commission back in late 2002. First of all, we rewrote the executive summary, and that has been included. Second, we've added an amendment to Alternative 1 in the plan, which we've labeled Option 1, and that basically was a suggestion to execute a limited fishery for red abalone at San Miguel Island, as well as propose some possible ways for assessment joint assessment of the red abalone population at the island. Third, we added additional index sites into the interim plan. Originally, there were only four index sites, and we've doubled that to eight. And finally, we have added both the peer review summary, which was not available at the time when we submitted the draft ARMP back in 2002, and that is now Appendix F. And we also added the public comments that were gathered from the public comment meetings from the past year, and that's now in Appendix G. And that pretty much concludes the presentation. If there are any questions, I'll entertain them at this point.
No, he won't, because he's on DVD.
I'm just curious, and maybe I've missed the meeting, and you've already done this, Ian, but
turn him off. He doesn't exist. He's virtual. But I do have a question. Dave, I mean, in case later people want to ask questions, that's what you're here for,
yeah,
right?
Can,
thank you.
I yeah. can answer as much as I can answer.
Yeah, thank you. And if not, we'll have staff at the next meeting. I'm just saying. Ian was on screen, but he's not here, so I didn't want people to think they couldn't ask questions.
Yeah,
but
Ian's going to jump out of my chest.
Really, we'll get to you in a minute, you know. Does anybody have any questions at this point? I just want to make sure, so you're here, because I don't want people to show up and think we don't have department staff here to answer questions. So you're here, and if not, we can get people answers. And then one thing I'm confused about, just remind me, how many index sites do we have now going on? Do we have 8 or 10? I mean, I forgot. Or 12?
I believe there's 8 on the North Coast.
Yes, so we added 4 after
there
through public comments.
There originally were 4, and then there was a suggestion, a recommendation to increase that, and they've increased it to 8.
Okay.
I believe 4 are what they call heavily used sites, and 4 are moderately used sites.
Okay. Just want to make sure I get that right.
How large are those sites? Do you know?
I could not tell you, but they're generally an area where they do a number of transects and other kinds of underwater surveys in a random stratified way to get a reasonable and statistically valid estimate of the abundance and the population structure of the abalone at that site over time.
Okay. So at this time, why don't we do the public hearing, public testimony. There, people be asked to come up and speak. We're asking people to keep it for around 3 minutes. There's not a whole lot of folks, so if you speak a little more than 3 minutes, that's okay. But don't go too long, and don't repeat things, and try to move the agenda forward. And, we'll get along just fine. Yeah. Oh, my God, now they're coming in, so I might have to keep you to 3 minutes. No. But.
Okay, first speaker is Harry Vogel, followed by Richard Pogray. Did I say that right?
Good evening. First of all, I'd like to thank you for allowing me and the public to make comment on this ARMP. And with that, I would like to briefly, my name's Harry Vogel. I started free diving for abalone in the late 50s, and to this day I'm still diving. I know the North Coast pretty well, and I've go for in the search urchin industry all along the coast. I've worked in Southern California abalone industry, out at the islands and along the coast. And I think there's a lot to be said and make comment too, but I won't have time. I would like to target my comments to the area that I know best. And that's where I worked for 30 years out of Half Moon Bay. I would like to stick with my comment sheet here, and I'll just read from it. My commercial abalone diving experience is from 1968 to the moratorium closure of 1997. Most of my diving experience in the North Central Abalone Zone, that zone is the Farallon Islands and the mainland from San Francisco to Pigeon Point. The ARMP plan and document mostly ignores, overlooks, and lacks good population data of this area. The document can only mention one transit study at the Fitzgerald Reef in 1993, and one attempt of a rogue survey at the Farallon Islands in 2000. And with that, the Fish and Game determines the population of the entire North Central Abalone beds is poor. Let me give you some true data that commercial Fish and Game landing receipts will show. Harvest level in the North Central area remained the same at 90,000 pounds from 1987 to 1997. This information was provided as testimony at Sacramento when the Thompson Moratorium Bill, AB 663, was passed. But unfortunately, the commercial Fish and game landing receipts were considered to be unreliable. The only information of data provided in the ARM plan shows a drastic depletion of stocks, and that data came from the Fish and Game Transit Study in 1993 at Fitzgerald Reef. This transit study showed low densities of abalone at 0.02 millimeters per hectare, and only one commercial-size abalone was found during this 4 days. I was there. I watched most of the transects, where they were set out, and they were set out in areas where harvest has never occurred. There were three commercial boats working at the same time on the same reef during the days of this study. And each one of these boats has harvested over 3 to 4 dozen abalone per day. You can check the Fish and Game landing receipts for this to verify this information. And this reef has also continued to provide abalone until the 1997 closure. To most people's way of thinking, you would think that if only one commercial abalone was found at the same area and at the same time period when 100 abalone per day are landed by commercial divers, it's time to continue more transects to assure your findings are accurate. This was not done, and to this day, after 8 years of closure, this is the only underwater swim information documented in the ARMP concerning the extensive large viable populations of abalone in the north central area. The only other efforts by the Fish and Game that is documented in ARMP is a rogue survey at the Farallon Islands. This survey states that the Farallon populations are low. Actually, they gave it the same hectare percentage as they did the reef, Fitzgerald Reef. And what is not in print on this document, and it makes this survey flawed, is the fact that the rove support vessel was not positioned close enough for the rove to reach where the abalones are normally picked. This statement was made by a commercial diver that was invited to assist on this survey. He is an experienced diver, very familiar with the Farallon Reefs. The Fish and Game leader of the survey has also made comment at RAC committee, that this survey should have been struck from this document. The ARMP states, for successful implementation of the ARMP, a need for constant gathering and monitoring of abalone must be done. So far, in the North Central California abalone zone, information is unrealistic and extremely poor. Being no assessment efforts were being accomplished in the North Central Coast since the closure, I have asked through RAC committee members and also people at the Menlo Park office to offer my time, boat equipment, 30 years of diving experience in this area. My offer was to do some unofficial transects or timed swimover studies to get an idea of how abalone populations have changed in the North Coast since the closure. The answers I received was from no comment to don't waste your time. I made these offers because I believe the job will never get done under the interim plan or the long. Obstacles to the researchers of the Fish and Game will be difficult in this zone because of lack of department funding and diving experience to safely survey these waters. These abalone beds in the North Central Coast are dangerous to dive. Reasons being, they are exposed to the open ocean and they lack safe protected coves. like the survey sites that are used on the north and south coast. Two, the water visibility is about the lowest in the entire state, all along our coast, not counting the Farallon Islands. Actually, the Farallon Islands is very good visibility. It is located also, happens to be located in the heart of the Shark Triangle. Some members of the California Abalone Association and myself would be glad to provide their services to accomplish this task in a professional way. And funding from commercial diver enhancement tax that was allocated before 1997 closure used to offset some of the expenses. One of the ARMP plans to future enhancement goals includes using reseeding modules and local broodstock outplantings. For several years before 1997, before the closure of 97, the commercial divers in the North Coast zone made a big effort outplanting and reseeding using the Ebert-type modules. This ARMP plan, the ARMP plan makes no comment of these efforts, nor does it mention any follow-up studies that may be helpful to the plan. This work has already been started, and we need to assess the populations now. I have recently surveyed some of these areas I have reseeded, and I'm gratified by what I've seen. For all it's worth, I cannot tell you how many abalone there are per hectare, but I will say there are as many as I see when I sport dive the northern study sites of Van Dam and Fort Ross. After reading a statement in the ARMP, and it states, historically, abalone and otters coexisted and shared a long evolutionary history during which abalones were at low densities within crevice habitats. I thought most likely a population of 6,600 abalone per hectare may be impossible and entirely dependent on the nature of each reef. If a population density of around 1,000 abalone per hectare or less have existed over long evolutionary time, could it be that 3,000 minimum viable population to 6,600 abalone hectare too inflexible? Every habitat is very unique in its own. Of the five major reefs, we gather abalone in the north central zone. Each one is totally different, and the population level must vary because of the food source, the currents, the recruitment, settlement, circulation, competition for food with sea urchins. All those differ in every reef. And each one is may possibly never reach, if for 1,000 years, 660, you can't measure it that way. These things in nature could very well make 6,600 unrealistic, and less than 3,000 could be normal in nature. As stated in the plan, normal, co-otter, and abalone historic levels are 1,000 or less. The sustainable fishery numbers are not broad enough because they are based on very limited survey data. In the ARMP plan, a statement is made that reliance on fisher data such as commercial landing receipts is a poor indicator of the stock's health. This same statement was also offered by the Fish and Game during the Thompson Bill hearing, AB 633. At that time, the California Abalone Association testimony was stating some level population facts in our area in the north central zone. And then you read on through the ARMP plan, and it states, an important assessment tool that will be used to gain population data will be through krill surveys and yearly sports punch cards. I don't get it. That sounds illegal and biased, and it's a manipulation of numbers for a self-agenda. To state that a daily turned-in commercial fish and game legal landing receipt that's full of data information sent in by professional divers is a poor assessment tool, and then say that the amateur krill survey that comes from sport divers, some who may not even know what an abalone looks like, and a yearly punch card that is easily altered and of which 20%, only 20% are returned to the fish and game, and they consider it is considered to be an important tool. That's a joke. The fish and game has not delivered what Moratorium Bill 663 has promised to date. If the fish and game ARMP plan is adopted, the lack of scientific personnel and funds to completely cover this huge California abalone coastal resource will be unrealistic. And if the fish and game track record of gathering abalone population data stays the same, like in our area of the North Central Coast, the North Central Coast will be the last or never to be reopened. I would like to suggest at this time an idea that's a win situation for all Californians, closer to alternate option plan number 1, 2, or 3. When I say all Californians, I mean people, the 99% of Californians that have no access to the resource. They are not capable of diving and getting in the water. Okay, in the ARMP plan, it states, it's documented that around 217,000 pounds of abalone are now being poached yearly off California's coast. As some enforcement officers know, some of that poaching is coming from the San Mateo County coast. The poachers know there's abalone there. But the majority is probably being poached from Sonoma and Mendocino. If a limited total allowable catch of 100,000 pounds that is now proposed in alternative option number 1 for the San Miguel Island and 100,000 pounds total allowable catch allotted to the North Central Zone, there would be a total of 200,000 pounds of legally documented abalone landed with landing receipts that have much resource data available to the legal market. Basically, by making 200,000 pounds of legal abalone available, the black market poachers will be severely impacted. It's a trade-off situation with little impact on the resource catch. And the state of California fish and game will also gain funds from a resource tax of on the 200,000 pounds of abalone with a 10% resource rent. A resource rent is a normal offer being made at around the world in different abalone fisheries. For 200,000 pounds, the catch value would be around $4,600,000. At 10% resource rent, the tax would generate $460,000 from the landing tax. You could add on another $100,000 for license and permit fees for the boats that'll be working, for the permit for the boat and the deckhand licenses, and the state will have $560,000 to help support this ARMP plan to fund the study. Plus, the state would get much-needed data from two major abalone zones from the commercial divers. Please do not waste this state's resource to unrealistic, over-precautious plan that is underfunded and data poor. I thank you again for the opportunity to exercise my viewpoint.
One second. Thank you. First of all, Mr. Vogel, thank you very much. I know you've made a lot of comments that the commission has brought up before. We, too, are concerned with data gaps, with how we're making this decision. We're going to be presented with seven different alternatives that I'm not comfortable to vote on any of them at this point because the same kind of things that you're talking about, I still don't have answers to. So these are all things that we're still, you know, arguing about among ourselves and with the public. One thing you just said, though, that I'm trying to understand, and it's not a challenge. You said that the win-win situation would be if we had a total allowable catch of 200,000 legally documented abalone, basically 200,000 pounds of black market abalone would be, you know, the poachers would be severely impacted. Why would that be? I don't get why they still don't get their 217,000 pounds of illegal.
Of any black market, it becomes very successful when there's no available market out there.
But doesn't California want 600,000 pounds of abalone? I mean,
well, we would hope that that's not the case. We can't say it, just like you can't really say how many exactly. Maybe there's even a lot more being.
Sure.
We don't know that. But it will severely impact the industry. That was mentioned, that was said by several of us at the closure point. You're creating a black market.
Always.
Because there's a lot of people out there. I mean, there's a lot of, there's more honest people, more honest markets.
Sure.
But there's plenty to get rid of all the abalone you want to get rid of.
Okay.
But if you make it available and a guy could legally buy it, plus it's an exorbitant price, the price would come down, then it would it would kill the black market.
Okay.
Basically.
Thank you. Thank you. Before the next speaker, I said we weren't going to keep people to the three-minute limit because I was trying to be generous, and I think Mr. Vogel had important things to say, but he spoke for 21 minutes. So not to point any fingers, but let's try to combine it a little and move this agenda forward. Thank you very much.
Richard Pogre, followed by Ed Schultz.
I don't want to repeat everything that Mr. Vogel said, so I'll waive my time. I think he pretty much covered our feelings about the North Central California coast, where we dive. I just want to make a point that we had about 19, 20 divers working out of Pillar Point Harbor, and five or six of those divers had purchased their licenses. We're not the sharpest marbles in the world, but in order to do that, you put a lot of money out, so I don't think somebody would buy into this business if the resource wasn't there.
Sure.
And basically, the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve survey, the Fitzgerald Marine Reserve itself was the most utilized dive area on the San Mateo coast for a number of years. Close population densities. It had an exterior reef out there that allowed divers to go in and out of the water on a continual basis, basically. And a lot of rock pickers and shore pickers, and so it was, I would say, overutilized, and the survey was done there. Thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you. Short and sweet.
Ed Schultz, followed by Jim Martin.
Yeah, I had a couple of proposals on. The first one is I'd like to see November, that month, close for the take of abalone. Two reasons. First, it'd be the least impact on the local campgrounds and businesses on the coast where most of the people would go, because it's not a vacation month. It's an up and back. It doesn't impact the campgrounds. Secondly, on that same thing in November, I understand that they had a reorganization in enforcement where they go laterally across the state instead of a coastal zone. During the month of November, an enforcement officer he's got duck, he's got pheasant, he's got turkey, he's got all these other things he has to worry about. If he can take the abalone worry away from him, get more efficient use of the enforcement population in November. Because it's open 7 months right now. 6 months is still plenty of time. The other thing is on a parallel of the utilizing the punch card similar to a deer tag, my recommendation would be you don't buy a punch card at a bait shop or a sporting goods store. You buy an application like a deer tag. That application goes to DFG headquarters in Sacramento. The data is inputted there, and you've got a number. It's usually your driver's license number. Some number that identifies you, so it prevents somebody from buying another license, getting another punch card, because that data is in the computer. Then the importance of that card to be returned at the end of the year, it's like you stated, that's a major bit of information, because as where the abalones, what zones get hit the heaviest, where they most come from. And if that card is not returned at the end of the year, you can say, hey, you don't get one next year, or as an administrative cost, to as an incentive to make sure you return that card, because that's the basis of the biologist's information. Also, on that card, there's zones. And they're just starting to do the input. I talked to Jerry Kashiwada in Fort Bragg, and they're using that to take the volume of different zones. Now, they can graph that, and after a while, if the take drops drastically, they can say, whoops, that's an area that needs to do a survey. They can't survey all the areas, but a zone that has a drop in take is a key thing. They can use that. Further down the line, they can use that zones to issue a punch card similar to an X-zone deer tag. If you're familiar with those, you have to draw. It's like a raffle on the thing. Mm-hmm. You have first, second choice. Limit the amount of heavy take abalone, i.e. Moat Creek. That's just depleted almost of abalone. But instead of closing it all together, only issue 300 punch cards with an overset of whatever the zone is. I think it's 40-something for that code. Similar to the Stornetta property, which is just opened this year. It was fantastic, but it got hit real heavy. Instead of keeping a lot of people going in there and depleting it altogether, issue only a certain amount for that area and let the people have first, second, third choice. The exception for landowners already exists for your X-zone deer tags. You know, landowners get so many for that. But all of the methodology in utilizing the abalone punch card similar to deer tag, it already exists. The computers are set up for that, and like I say, there's exceptions have already been answered. But I think it's a key thing if we utilize that for 5 years from now, 10 years from now, because abalone aren't migratory. Right. So many things that we harvest, fish, the pheasants, the ducks, are all harvestable in 1, 2, or 3 years, and abalone 7 to 14 years. So we have to protect what abalone we have. 96% of the abalone comes from Mendocino, Sonoma County, and they're already split up into zones. If we don't control that, I think we're going to lose the bubble and lose a very valuable asset we have. Thank you.
Thank you. Thoughtful suggestions, that's what we need.
Jim Martin, followed by Rob Cousins.
Thanks for the opportunity to comment. My name is Jim Martin, again, Recreational Fishing Alliance. At this point, I just have some questions maybe for Dave, because I'm not real familiar with the plan, but I've looked over it a couple times. And what are in the area, are there any transect sites that are where there's sea otters, and what are the actual natural densities of abalone in those southern regions?
I don't think we have any transect sites here. The plan and the law that set
you,
the plan.
Yeah, you guys
in place
can do it. You know,
kind of exempted areas that were dominated or become dominated by sea otters from any application of the plan. There have been other studies by academics and other researchers of abalone populations within Central California where sea otters have been for decades, and the densities are low, and again they tend to be confined to cryptic crevice, very protected habitat where sea otters can't reach. And once abalone get to a size where they can't fit in a small crevice anymore, they have to move out. They usually are preyed on by sea otters rather quickly. So in terms of a fishery, as we understand a fishery, large adult abalone coexisting with that kind of situation, it's not very very applicable.
Right. Well, so sea otters are inconsistent with an abalone fishery, that's fair to say.
Right. With an abalone fishery, at least a long-standing abalone fishery, with an abalone stock of some sort, not inconsistent, and of course they did evolve and exist together for eons, if not longer.
Right. What is the meaning of the lost recovery areas? How do we lose those areas?
I think in the presentation it talked about perhaps expansion of sea otter population into existing abalone areas. There could be things such as we had this event with withering syndrome where we lost large numbers of healthy abalone stocks in areas that don't have sea otters. Something like that, an unexpected, anticipated event. You could have habitat loss or habitat damage, especially along the mainland where you could have large silty runoffs occur due to human or other events. We've seen things like that on small scale. A series of El Ninos in a decade, we saw a significant impact to some abalone stocks from things like that. Kelp, the main food abalone, is decreased for a long enough time.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wait, Jim, one more question.
Sorry, yes, I have one more question.
Good,
sorry.
One more. I want to have Dave grilled up there, you know.
this is a comment. I'm a little concerned about the management criteria that when there is a significant increase in the distance from the access point to get your abalone, that may be an indicator to shut that area down. And with the limitation on 24 abalone a year, a lot of guys are going out and just taking one abalone. They're going further to get a big one. And so I don't think that that's a valid criteria for a management decision. And that's the main comment I have. Thanks. I'll have more written comments.
Do we have a comment to that comment about the distance? I'm just wondering how the department thinks.
I'm not sure if it would apply to just what one person's experience was, a trophy hunter, but my experience with abalone primarily is in Southern California, and as we were examining what had happened there over decades, we noticed that when sport diving became very popular, most of the areas that were used for abalone take were right along the mainland, and then the next area was Catalina Island, and then the next area was the next closest island, and the next closest island. Then you ran out of islands. And if you looked at that distance traveled by whatever means, it was a pretty, and then you went and looked at what the abalone stocks looked like in those areas, it was a pretty close fit. You know, and it only makes sense. You go where you have the highest success rate.
Okay, thank you.
Rob Cousins, followed by Mike Malone.
Hello again. I basically just reserved a spot in case I felt a need to comment on comments that were made. I have not seen that so far, so I'm giving
Thank
my
you.
Time.
Mike Malone, followed by Jim McCray.
I'm Mike Malone. I'm with SCAN, Sonoma County Abalone Network. A couple of, I guess, comments / questions. If the fishery's closed, a significant portion is closed, how would it then management be funded? Right now there's a big chunk that comes from the stamps and all that. So that's a concern question. It seems like if the fishery declines, then just when we need the data and the science, there's no funding available. The other thing is there was a criteria one was looking for a broad size range in the populations, presumably so there's adult animals and recruitment and the whole spectrum. My question is in the fishery up here, which is effectively an abnormal overpopulation of abalone because we don't have otters, does the habitat get full of adults? And so there just really isn't room in the habitat for the kind of recruitment you would otherwise see. And I think that's true with a lot of reef fishes. If you take out all the big fish, then you have lots of recruitment because the habitat's wide open. So I'm not sure that criteria is, I mean, I don't know, I'm not an abalone biologist, but I'd put a question mark on that criteria. The other is on the lost recovery area. It says if 50% of the area is lost due to pollution or habitat degradation, that the remaining 50% would be closed to enhance recovery. But in the special case of otters moving into an area, I don't really see the logic in closing the remaining portion. If otters are just going to continue to move in, you shut down the fishery, but you're not going to have a recovery. As soon as the otters come in, you drop down to those very low natural densities. And then I think this was a comment that was brought up at one of the previous meetings a year or so ago. On the edges of the abalone habitat, their natural range, for example, up in Humboldt County, you may not ever get the densities that the plan is looking for. Does that necessarily entail that you would shut those areas? And I don't know if the plan it recognizes that on the edges of the natural range, you're not going to have the densities, but you can still have a fishery as they currently have up in Humboldt County. The last thing, I'll end it here, is right now, at least in my mind, this is one fishery that's conducted effectively in slow motion. It's very heavily regulated, at least on the North Coast where it's a sport fishery. You know, you have a seasonal closure, you have a size limit that gives the animals probably about 9 to 10 years of reproductive opportunity. You've got, you know, three animals per day. You've got a seasonal limit. And it's breath hold, so you're very limited in where you can get these guys. The fishery is conducted in slow motion, which seems to me that we'd really, the whole idea there is to avoid abrupt management changes. You know, what we hope we don't see are these sudden recognitions that, oh, my God, we've got to close an area. Hopefully the department is able to kind of process the data quickly, timely, get it out to the public, and we have a year or two to kind of chew on it before, you know, bad things start to happen to the fishery. So thank you.
Sure.
Jim McRae, followed by Gene Kramer.
Good evening. Thank you for the opportunity to speak today. first of all, I'd just like to encourage the commission to do everything that they can with the legislature and the governor to provide funding to the Department of Fish and Game to really take care of this management plan. I've, you know, been involved in some other hearings Management Act and those kinds of things, and there still seems to be a kind of a low funding for Department of Fish and Game. Thank God we've got some outside sources for the Marine Life Protection Act. But in order to do an effective job of evaluating this resource, we really need to do something with the Fish and Game Department to do a good job of the surveys of the areas that we're going to be considering for regulations for our population over the future. So I think that's real critical, and as one of a couple other speakers brought up, there's, you know, kind of insufficient data right now out there for us to really do a good analysis. Just curiously, for some reason, I don't know what the size of a hectare is. How big of a area is that?
2.6 acres.
Hectare is 10,000 square meters, so it's a plot of habitat that's 100 meters on a side, and not being metric myself, I always think of like two football fields laid side by side. That's pretty close.
2.6 acres, right? Isn't that what it is?
Something like that.
Don't ask me to convert hectares to acres in my head, but yeah, a hectare is about, yeah, it's more than an acre. Yeah, yeah, about two football fields laid side to side.
That's how I see it.
Perfect, because that just gives a, I don't know.
Yeah,
I'm the only one in the room, but
two football fields. That's
a couple football fields to evaluate it. Just my experience. I've been diving for a few years here, about 25 years on the Sonoma-Mendocino coast. Not as long as some of these other gentlemen are in the room, but in diving, I've, you know, had the fortunate thing of having a rubber boat to be able to go kind of all over the place and look at areas, and I've pretty much hit the whole coastline of Sonoma from, you know, just north of Jenner all the way to Gualala at various times in my career. And we really do, my experience, and even more so lately, have a with the new regulations that the Fish and Game has adopted with the 24-year, have a pretty stable population of the adult abalones in the areas that are not as accessible. The populations are still a little lower, I see, when I go to like a Fort Ross and go for a dive. There's not as many large abalone there, but there's still a pretty good population in those areas, you know, but it's not as sizable as, the, as say, an area that you have to go to by a boat and you can't just dive in off the shore. So just a comment on, as you're doing your analysis, one of the things I did notice in the plan, it had, I think, Ocean Cove as a moderately used area, and I kind of challenged the commission on that one based on my experience. That's a pretty, it's probably it's the only boat ramp on the north coast of Sonoma County that's easily kind of launch a boat without a lot of tugging your boat around, and I see quite a few people diving out of that. Plus, it's a real sizable private campground right there, so that's probably the size of the Salt Point campground. So it's a pretty highly used area, so using that as one of the moderately used zones when you're evaluating your criteria would be something to take a look at. And then just commenting on some of the other comments about the success rate and the distance traveled, I don't know. My experience is my friends that just want to get home to their family want to go to Fort Ross from Santa Rosa because it's close and they can still get abalone. Those of us that have more time in the day, you know, are willing to drive a little farther, like they said, for the bigger abalone and go once or twice just to, you know, get go home with, you know, one abalone is worth three, you know, one bigger abalone is like three Fort Ross abs. So so that's, I think, the main comments I have, and thank you very much.
Gene Kramer, followed by George Lowry.
My name is Gene Kramer. I'm a recreational diver. I've been diving for about 36 or 37 years now. The comments I have on the plan are as follows. Overall, I like the notion of a density-dependent model, so that if the density drops too low, then you start thinking about closing the fishery. I think that gives us a much better framework than we ever had in the past, where we were looking at you know, size limits and seasonal quotas and this sort of thing. I think we kind of missed the boat there with the previous regulatory schemes. I have some concerns on the density model about how it's going to be applied to places like Humboldt County, which never probably had, you know, 6,000 abalone per hectare. The people that I know who dive that area tell me that there's not many abalone and there's not many times you can get in the water there, but they do enjoy going there. And if we close it in Humboldt County, it will be closed forever because it'll never achieve that density. I don't think it ever did. This kind of model of density in opening and closing sites is also subject to, I guess you'd call it, certain whims of interpretation. What exactly is a site? And how do we define that? I mean, is a rock a site? Is a reef a site? Is a county a site? Is Northern California a site? And, you know, where are we measuring the density? And I know that in a framework like this, you can't really define everything and put down every last detail because it becomes too burdensome and cumbersome. I would hope that in implementing this plan that Fish and Game is open to comments from the sport fishing community in terms of how we implement this and how we decide what a site is and how we measure density on that. I mean, overall, it's a relatively tough process because we don't have enough money, we don't have enough data, and we probably never will. We just have to take the best shot that we can at it. And with that, thank you.
Thanks. Yeah, I just want to comment one second about, I am not an abalone biologist at all. I've eaten it a few times, and I'm learning a lot from you folks, but I'm leaning in my deliberations here, you know, towards the density model too. But I think just the density model, and later I'll be told by department people or divers why I'm wrong here, but I think a density model also has to have a sort of a regional or zone overlay to it. It can't just be the same density everywhere. And in addition to that, I think we do have to have some good definitions of sites. Because of that, and because we don't have funding, we don't have monitors, if one of these plans that goes forward reopens the abalone fishery, I really, really hope that the department and the diving community and the sports fishermen and the other folks will work together to do that. Because the more I hear from you folks, the more I see that it's not just regional density, it's almost spot-specific density sometimes about where you know the abalone is, where we don't know it is, and how we maintain that kind of information exchange so that we can make sure fisheries don't go extinct or they're not closed needlessly. So I'm just reflecting here on this. I'm not voting on anything. But density, of course, is important, I think, but also how the density applies to specific zones and regions is also important. And trying to draw that map on this plan or overlay all those facts is going to be a difficult thing to do in the next month or so. So that's just where I'm moving. And later, if folks want to talk to me or email me, just let me know why I'm wrong or why I'm heading in the right direction on that. So I just wanted to throw that out there. And I have one question for the department that has sort of come out of a couple of the last gentlemen's comments, and it's just my own thought. Is there a minimum number of surveys, like per month or year or something, specified in the plan to determine recruitment, density, or depletion? I mean, are we just shotgunning this? I mean, do we know what's going on there?
I think it depends on what level of precision and accuracy you'd want in your estimates.
The best.
You know, well, if you want to be able to tell, like, a 50% change, yeah, it's surprising how much work you've got to do to do that. So somewhere you have to choose what level of accuracy and precision you're willing to accept in managing any kind of resource, and will that fit the resources you have to make it happen?
And we have to do that. I mean, we have to do that, and then we're told there's no funding, there's no people. So I'm just, and I'm not blaming the department. I'm just saying, how do we decide? That's where the buck stops here.
I don't think the plan lays that out at this point, but that would be something that the plan would set in motion, that those kinds of information would be generated as a result of the plan being in place and encouraging this additional work and increased understanding of what's going on with abalone stocks throughout the state.
Okay. Thank you.
George Lowry, followed by Curtis Degler.
Yeah, my name is George Lowry. I'm from Sonoma County Abalone Network. I'd like to talk about two things. One is enforcement and poaching, and the second is data gathering. SCAN was formed in 1995 as a direct result of the poaching that was happening here in the North Coast. I mean, there were literally tons of abalone being poached. That's still happening. Last year, they caught two guys with 486 abalone. And periodically, you'll catch these guys that are diving and taking large sums of abalone. But the real problem has evolved now with the punch cards. And there's a regular epidemic of punch card violations. And these guys are going to the coast every day, diving every day, getting three abalone, not punching their cards. And consequently, by the end of the year, they might have 50, 60, 100 abalone. I keep a record, or our organization keeps a record of the court cases, and it's been astounding in the last several weeks. There's probably been 30 or 40 cases of punch card violations. And I think that having the plan mentions a point of sale situation for licensing and punch cards. And that same language was in the plan in the beginning, and I brought this up and I asked the question, when is California going to get into the computer business and have a up-to-date situation where you can track licenses and you can pinpoint people that are duplicating licenses? And that question is still out there. The other thing is a matter of gathering data. For a while, SCAN worked with Fish and Game in doing the creel surveys, and we did them on about five different points on the North Coast. And periodically, for about 5 years, we did these and gathered rather significant data. And at that time, that was the only real hard data that was coming in. We stopped doing that, mainly because we never get any feedback. We wanted to know, where is all this information going? We put out a newsletter. We would like to have some data in the newsletter showing what our efforts have achieved. We never got it. So it's really been difficult for us to partner with Fish and Game on the creel surveys. We do have one offer that I made last year, and it still stands. That is, there's only about 20% of the cards, punch cards, that are sent in. And there was talk about, making a penalty for not turning them in, making it a misdemeanor, et cetera, et cetera. And we said, well, why not give a prize? I mean, why not have a raffle? Put numbers in the cards, put out a raffle for a wetsuit or kayak or whatever, and maybe up this 20% that you're now getting. And Stan still offers to put up the prize. So if you can put me in touch with somebody in the department, maybe we can get that going. Thank you.
Thank you. I have a quick question triggered by your – no, not by, not oh. for you, but by for Mr. Stacy. Where are we on our automatic licensing data system? I mean, I just know that we've been out there for 5 years negotiating and request for proposals and all that. I'm wondering where we are.
Next Tuesday at 3:00.
Yeah. We're going to have it in place? Good. God, you're a hero. You're a hero. I mean, because obvious, as this man suggested, and we've been talking about for years, California needs this, you know, punch card data systems full of holes, no joke intended. And, you know, automatic licensing is going to be, So where are we on that?
We recognize the value of being able to get that. There's a bunch of things beyond our control.
Money.
But also just being able to get approval for the technology that we need to be able to make that happen. Funding is the biggest issue. But we get closer every, I hate to say every year. I really don't have an exact date. Don't quote me. It's not next Tuesday at 3 o'clock.
But we're still moving forward.
Definitely still moving forward.
And everything possible is being done.
I think to be fair to Mr. Stacey, it's not appropriate to ask him
to be accountable for that.
I'm not saying that.
I just know he's in the department would know more than I did. That's
certainly
all.
Something that he's had little to do with over time.
No, I'm blaming you. Okay, we'll figure that out. Internal
stuff. There's a card right there. You want to see how the zones are separated.
Thank you. I'll learn to say, thank you.
It's, I don't want to say anything about it either. The department has talked about ALDS, the Automated License Data System, for a long time now. And there are meetings going on continually, and they're right at the edge of being ready to do things, and they've been compromised by other state entities within California that have had problems. They've been compromised by a whole bunch of things. So I hope someday that it happens too. That's all I can say.
And all kind of issues, not just Abilene.
Yeah, it's solved a lot of problems.
For everything. For all the hunting and
I think there are a lot of people that recognize that in the commission, in the department, in the communities that are using the resources. You know, it's not just ab divers, it's deer hunters, it's all the way around, and everybody knows it. There are good solid reasons that don't even apply to fish and game type of things that make it be a good thing to do. And the concept that was brought up a few minutes ago about it stops somebody from buying a double license, you know, sure, obvious.
Now it's a manual inspection.
You bet. And I go to Oregon and you know, the warden can look at my license right away and run the numbers to see exactly who I am. There's all sorts of benefits to it. There have just been I don't even want to go into the complications that have been there. That's it.
All right.
Do we have one more person? I apologize if I've missed anybody here. The last speaker that I have is Curtis, and excuse me if I get this wrong, but I have Degler. Okay.
Again, my name is Curtis Degler. I've been diving in California for 30 years now. In Southern California and also in the north, I'm associated with the Sonoma County Abalone Network. The purpose of the Abalone Recovery Management Plan is to effectuate the recovery of abalone primarily in the southern region. There has been no fishing legally for abalone in the southern region for 7 years. My question for the department has been, is there been any recovery of abalone? Reds and greens.
That's what you're
pinks.
Talking.
I mean, pinks.
I mean, you want a real answer.
What's happened?
You're talking about Southern California.
Primarily.
To the best of my knowledge, overall recovery could be described as very limited, but there have been a few areas where increases in abalone, some green abalone at San Clemente and Catalina Island, there's been some evidence of some recent recruitment. In the Point Loma area, a very historic and productive abalone habitat down near San Diego. There's some people at Scripps that have some long-term stations there, and they have seen some signs of pink abalone recruitment over the last 5 or 6 years. San Miguel Island, which was the last best place for abalone in Southern California when the fisheries were closed, continues to probably have the best abalone stocks. They're almost all red abalone. In Southern California, but they're still below any of the criteria that the plan currently has. Generally, in Southern California, we've had pretty favorable oceanographic and habitat conditions since 1999. We've had very good kelp years, generally cooler water than we had for two decades before that. That's got to have a good impact on at least the forage base for abalone of all sizes and ages. So those things are looking good, and if take is continued to be limited and we see some, you know, recruitment that builds on itself, we would hope that we would see successive years of recruitment, just not just a single once a decade event. So some signs of hope, but again, I think the plan says many, many years before most of Southern California would be considered even near.
And that's recovery without a plan, too. That's just
right.
Recovery.
That's just kind of letting it happen without doing anything active other than having fishery take removed.
Okay. Thank you.
I would like to suggest for the department that an evidence of the recovery of abalone in Southern California could potentially be easily effectuated by a collection of empty abalone shells that have been killed by the predation of shellfish and cabezon and other predators that you find just swimming along the surface of the reef, both large and small, rather than doing much more complicated transect studies. And actually, the last time I was diving in Santa Cruz Island, which was actually about 4 years ago, I didn't see any evidence of any small shells whatsoever. However, in Monterey, which has had a heavy predation by sea otters for at least 30 years, since I've been diving there in 78, there's been no fishery at all, and only by very carefully looking in cracks and crevices will you see abalone. I still consistently see, when I'm diving, sometimes six, seven-inch abalone shells that are fresh, very fresh. Obviously, they're there. You can spot them in the crevices. And I also see a significant evidence of smaller abalone of about 3-inch size, which often are the results of predation by cabezon that inhale the abalone in whole. I'm just saying that there's a despite the presence of sea otter predation in Monterey and probably the reduction of abalone to a level below, 2,000 abalone per hectare? But there's an extinction level?
Somewhere below that.
Well, I think that extinction level is very, 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 very high that you have set, and that, in fact, there could be very, very few abalone in an area, and that would be normal, and they would not be extinct. And that's their natural range. I think also that it appeared from the presentation of the evidence of the decline of abalone in the Southern California region over a period of time, as evidenced by the decline in take, that it was in fact that the decline of abalone in Southern California was actually caused by by take, when in fact I believe it was caused by the withering syndrome, really almost entirely, and that while there would be tremendous reductions in population of abalone, there would probably still be quite a few abalone there, especially small ones, if it wasn't for that withering syndrome, and that some of these population levels that you have established for sustainable take may actually be, in my opinion, rather high in order to maintain that population. Comment about zonal closures. There have been a number of people opposed small zonal closures, and I think it's very, very hard to manage that and for divers and other harvesters to understand what's closed and what isn't closed. And zonal closures should be very, very large. There could be a sandy beach and there's very few abalone there. You could say, well, this 1.25 mile is closed to abalone and then it's open and then closed, and it'll really be a nightmare to manage it that way. So I would oppose that. My final comment has to do with poaching. There was the comment made that the opening of a commercial fishery in the region, say District 10 is what it used to be called up in the Monterey area, would result in a decline in poaching, or at least what I would call commercial poaching, which is poaching for sale of abalone, because there's sport poaching where somebody will take an extra abalone for their grandmother or somehow make a mistake. And I think there's a big distinction there. And I actually do not agree with that position. If abalone of a legal size are, again, commercially available in the state of California, poached abalone of that size can masquerade and be presented for sale commercially and also exported in great numbers. Now, market for poached abalone is primarily overseas, and if I'm not incorrect, and I may be, virtually the entire commercial haul of abalone in 1997 was exported, frozen and then exported to the east. There are billions of people there, actually, who consider abalone a very high, prestigious food and want to have it at their banquets and food and restaurants and so forth. And there is almost an unlimited demand. And these are poached abalone that could be taken from the North Coast, where currently there is no commercial fishery, could easily be sold under color of a legal abalone, and then marketing, you know, could increase. Once it's established that there's a market in the East for it, then there's a big pipe and a conduit for this. So I would oppose the opening of the District 10 for that specific reason, and certainly not open until, in fact, there are scientific studies that document very large and high densities. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
That's it. I'd just like to add one comment. A number of individuals submitted written comments to the commission, and we will forward those written comments to the department for their response. If any of you want to do the same, please come and get a card or something from me that would have an address to the commission so that you can get that to us.
This guy right here, you asked some really good questions, and I just want to make sure you got you. I'm pointing right. You, Jim, always ask good questions. In between the two Jims. In between the two Jims, this guy right here. You ask good questions, and I just want to make sure the department gets some answers to you, because I just thought, because I thought, I didn't know the answers, and I just thought you had some good questions. That's all. Not the gyms. They're always here asking questions, you know.
I thought there were some questions that came up that we do hope the department can answer at the August meeting. What I've heard repeatedly is the idea that there's insufficient data, and even the department's report or presentation indicated that. The sites you've chosen, how you determine those sites, and how did we rate those moderate versus highly fished sites? And what is the history of the population studies up in the Humboldt area? I heard that comment that, in fact, they probably never had that level of population. And so what is the history on that? I'm sure there's other points I'll think about as I go back through my notes, but those come to mind right away, and I'll forward those to you for response at the August meeting. End of August meeting. This is an August meeting.
The full commission meeting. Yeah. Thank you. Any other final comments from the department or anybody? One more second, Mr. Vogel. Nothing too complicated. We want to get out of here.
I'd like to make one quick comment.
Okay, comment you can do.
It was something to do with the black market and poaching that the gentleman... Last speaker.
No debates here. Go ahead. One.
No, the last speaker said he is certainly right in a lot of things there. But that's really, if there was an opener, that's a job for the fishing game that's capable of doing and affordable of doing.
Sure.
You've got to set up a fishery. You can't have a neck. Hey, did you realize that the early abalone fishery up till recent times was a non-export fishery? And that's what we need here. I agree with him there. We need that here.
Thank you.
We need to make the California resource available for Californians. And another thing I'd like to comment about that, there was no comparison to a farmed abalone. It's a different product. It's a button mushroom. It's a button abalone, and it can't really be produced as a steak abalone, and it is quite different. It's just like wild salmon, farmed salmon, and maybe sort of. Okay.
Thank you. Folks, thank you very much for your input. Like I said, we'll be doing this in Eureka and San Diego, and then having another full commission hearing in Morro Bay. When is it? 14th, 15th of August? Probably see a lot of you there. 18th and 19th
of August in San Luis Obispo.
Okay, I'm wrong. I don't know where I'm going. Thank you, folks. We'll conclude the meeting for the evening. He's a good guy. Yeah. Oh my God! Okay, thank you. See all those Japanese things. Yeah. But I'm not wrong, am I? Fine. But it might be hard to show. I mean, there has to be some kind of management. I mean, we have parking restrictions that are hard to follow. We have speed limits. You know what I mean? But otherwise, we're never going to have a fishery.
There's over 100 zones and areas.
The X's and the A's and the...
There's one area.
They always say it's too hard to enforce. If you were told as a diver that you can